Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here to have another conversation I'm hoping helps your business grow. Speaking of businesses growing, over the course of business history, innovation, robotics, and now AI are driving so much output and scalability. So we're going to talk about that today. And before I introduce today's guest, today's episode of Startup Hustle is powered by Fullscale.io. Hiring software developers is difficult, and Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has the platform to help you manage that team. Go to Fullscale.io to learn more. If you're not aware, that's my business, and we love talking to Startup Hustle listeners. So click that link in the show notes. And let's see if we can help you out. With me today, I've got Benji Barish. Benji is the co-founder and CEO of Roboto.ai. You can go to Roboto AI. You can go find more information about Benji's company at Roboto.ai. There's a link for that in the show notes. Why don't you scroll down and click it so you can have some context about some of the complex and tricky things that we may discuss today. Straight out of Seattle, Washington, Benji, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt. I'm a big fan of the show. Really glad to be on.
I'm a big fan of robots and AI, but I don't know as much as you do. So I'm looking forward to learning more about it. Before we get into that, how about we start with a little bit about your own backstory and what brought you to all of this stuff?
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from London, now living in Seattle. So you might hear a bit of an accent.
And God save the Queen. I think I'm supposed to say
the King these days.
The King. Yeah. It's true. Do we have to all change to say that now?
We do. We have to change all the money as well.
You know, people from Europe are always surprised when I say that, but thanks for the correction. All right.
Yeah. So I'm originally from London, moved to Seattle. I actually moved to Seattle with Amazon. That's who I was working for in the UK. And then obviously, Amazon's based in Seattle here. They have a big headquarters. I was working for some of their robotics projects in the UK, especially Prime Air, the drone delivery project. That took me here to Seattle to do more R&D for them. And then I spent about 7 years working at Amazon in their robotics divisions and got kind of fed up with how hard it was to build robots. And me and my co-founder decided to do something about it and started this company, Roboto AI, to really help robotics companies get to market faster and solve a lot of the hard things along the way.
What is hard about building robots?
Great question. Robots are just so, so powerful, but they still are remarkably naive at doing certain tasks.
Sure.
There's always a lot of edge cases that pop up. People think that, you can just strap a camera to some hardware and have it go and do some complex things, but the real world is just such a random number generator and things always go wrong. And so companies get to the point where they think their robot's ready for production, that they can roll them out and scale up a fleet of them. They start doing that and really they just discover kind of quickly that things go wrong. And that's because they weren't able to catch a lot of the problems during development and even verification early on in the life cycle. And ultimately things just don't pan out, and they end up spending a lot of capital on that hardware development, but it's just a tricky space to get things right.
So at Roboto, do you build robots and AI, or do you consult and help people make their robots and AI actually work properly?
So we're building, the specific thing that we're building is data infrastructure to help robotics companies analyze all of the data that their robots produce. And so they usually need that during development because they need to kind of build new algorithms to make the robots do the things they actually want them to do. And they also need to be able to analyze all that data to figure out, like, when something went wrong, why did it go wrong? Like, how many times have we seen this issue before? Is it the first time we've seen this problem? Or is there actually something like really, really bad fundamentally with how we've architected the system? So our primary product is a data platform that these robotics companies can upload all that data to, and then get more insights really about how their robots are performing and functioning.
Yeah, we've had a lot of data discussions and episodes on this. And the one thing that I always bring up is that data is pretty worthless if it doesn't create an actionable outcome. And that's essentially what it sounds like you're doing is like, and you got to do it in a quick way, because reviewing your data and realizing that 30% of your clients churned for a particular reason, but they're already gone. That's just history. That's a history class at that point. It's not necessarily innovative. You haven't done anything to move the needle. Now, you mentioned, you talk about businesses and growing and scaling and all that. I feel like whether, regardless of how people, some people love Amazon, some people might not, Amazon has mastered efficiency if you haven't ever done it, go to YouTube and like type in Amazon fulfillment robots or something. And you just see these, like, I mean, they do amazing stuff. Why is it important to study? Because I've used Amazon's mentality, not necessarily, I'm not going to say I got it and studied it, but that Amazon will look at everybody that works in these places, and they're trying to reduce the number of steps that they take, the number of turns they have, the number of times they have to bend over, different things. Because when you scale this across like hundreds and hundreds of thousands of employees or hundreds of thousands of actions, all those wasted movements turn into dollar signs.
Yeah, that's right.
And the same thing with robots, because like what I do know about them is that, well, first off, they're not taking over the world and killing everyone in the factory, but they might kill everyone. Yeah. They could kill everyone or some people in the factory by turning the wrong way or grabbing something the wrong way. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, and I would imagine that some of that is some of the first problems that you have to try to help avoid, is like just the general error code stuff.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you hit on a really interesting issue as well, which is like the safety and reliability of these kinds of systems. And really anywhere there's a robot that might be in a kind of what we would call an unstructured environment. So maybe humans, other people are walking around, maybe there's other things going on.
Right.
They just have to be ultimately super safe and super reliable. If anything goes wrong, you can imagine that's potentially a huge liability for a company like that. If unfortunately some injury happened or occurred. So that's definitely an area where these companies struggle pretty quickly. And a lot of robots today have actually been successful in mostly structured environments where, they're behind a cage of some kind and no one can really get to them. And that's because the risk is lower because there's less happening. But as soon as you bring robots into a warehouse or maybe into the real world, maybe drone delivery or self-driving cars, the stakes just go way up because, stuff goes wrong because humans are there. And if a robot does the wrong thing or, breaks suddenly in the self-driving car, someone could get hurt.
I've done it. I have two Teslas that are self-driving and I love the technology, but 99.9% of the time it drives better than I might. And honestly, it does. I mean, because it follows the rules, but then there's that 1 out of 1,000 times where it does something weird and you're just like, what?
Yeah.
And it's funny because that's so what I remember, not the good parts.
Yeah.
There was one, if you've ever, the Tesla self-driving technology, like you look at it from a user perspective, first off, one of the things when it comes to robots is people are like, well, what was different about it? I'm like, well, first you got to learn to trust it. because it's coming up on another car. And when you first do it, you're like, please stop. And it's going to stop. But please stop.
Probably.
So the same thing goes with like any robots and all that. So, one thing I should have asked right at the beginning, what is a robot?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think generally speaking, a lot of people think of robots as the sort of C-3PO or R2-D2 in a Star Wars, right?
But they're not.
They're definitely not. Most robots don't look humanoid. Really, a robot is actually just anything that's got some kind of sensor strapped to it so it can perceive the world, either a camera or a LiDAR or a radar, something like that. And then it usually does some kind of movement in the world as well. It actuates. So in response to its environment, it will do something. It'll move a thing. It'll, you know, move forward or you know, enact some action that's useful. And that's really all a robot is. And most robots actually, yeah, they certainly don't look humanoid. They might actually just look like, you know, some metal with some arms coming out of it or even a self-driving car or a drone. Those are all robots as well.
Yeah, and a robot is that simple arm that lifts itself up, it drills a hole, the thing moves down the line, and it does it on the next one. That's a robot. So speaking of robots and AI, I decided to ask the world's most popular AI, GPT, what a robot was while you were mentioning that. It says, it's a mechanical or virtual device designed to perform tasks automatically or autonomously. It's typically programmable and can be controlled by computer programs or algorithms. Robots come in various forms, ranging from industrial to manufacturing to humanoid. And then, it's got a lot more. It does mention they're almost always equipped with sensors, actuators, control systems. Now, here's the thing. That stuff's complex.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And there are so many ways that those systems fail. It's kind of incredible. I mean, just in the robotics career I've had, like, you know, we used to have issues flying drones and a bird would poop on the cameras and suddenly the drone can't see anymore. And you know, it's the same with different types of weather conditions and self-driving cars. You know, those sensors.
That happened to my car. I had like a mud or something like got up and it hit like one of the side cameras and like here and I had to stop and clean it off because like every mile I was getting this really annoying alert that was just like, but part of that is that CYA mentality, cover your ass, because Tesla doesn't want you to hit something on the left side because the camera can't see it.
It's
back into that. How much of what you guys do is falls under that CYA?
It's definitely a lot of it. I mean, the almost the point you're hitting on is that there's this really long tail of stuff that can go wrong with these systems. And honestly, like the successful companies that have deployed these sorts of robots in production already, like Tesla, they just have enormous teams of people that are building this kind of data infrastructure to find these edge cases and find these problems, even in simulation or in real drives that they do in test environments. They want to find these problems a long time before any of their customers do. Because of course, as you said, it completely ruins the experience. You know, you're driving along 1 minute, you're like, wow, this is the future. And then it does the stupidest thing. And you're like, okay, yeah, this is nowhere near as capable as I am as a human being. And so that's exactly what we help companies with. Our data infrastructure makes it possible for them to find some of these edge cases during development. And that's much, much cheaper to fix and triage than it would have been if they ended up finding them in production and had a customer call them up and be like, hey, the robot you sold me did some really stupid shit.
Yeah. So where does the AI component come in with the problems that you're helping solve?
Yeah. So we get involved with companies where they already start collecting a lot of data. They've put that data maybe in the cloud somewhere, or they actually just have it stored in different devices. The data that these robots produce is enormous. Like you can imagine a self-driving car is collecting in, you know, like 10, 15 minutes, it's collecting hundreds of gigabytes of data. So as soon as you need to review and analyze what happened in just one drive, you have to almost get 100 gigabytes worth of data, maybe terabytes of data just for a single drive. And we use AI to almost identify the interesting parts of that data so that you don't necessarily need to go through all of it just to find kind of where the problems necessarily occurred. And then we also use AI to retrieve from the big database of video and imagery that you might have all the other similar cases that might have happened as well. So for example, a lot of the time these problems happen, people are like, wow, I can't believe how crazy this edge case our robot ran into was. I bet we've never had that problem before. But then you go back and look at the data, if you can, and you discover that you probably almost had that issue hundreds, maybe thousands of times.
Yeah.
But you just came really close to it not being a problem. And you were kind of lucky all those other cases. And just this one time, it kind of tipped over the edge.
That's the interesting part of the common use of so many forms of AI is looking for the correlating factors that come in. Now, and I don't have I'm going to give a very inaccurate number here, but I was reading a book about data science a year or so ago. Yeah, that's what I do with my spare time, people. So I'm reading this book. Well, no, I wanted to be able to communicate about it, but I was reading it. Actually, I didn't even read a book, dude. I was listening to the Audible. All right. Which kind of the same thing, but it was talking about, it was using a phone company like AT&T or whoever, and they are collecting petabytes of data like every hour. And yeah. then they have a requirement to store it for years upon that. Mm-hmm. And you look at like the nature of that, there is not a human that can consume that. And then with that, we're also biased.
Totally. Yeah.
In a lot of ways, like in, you know, and that ability to connect all those dots. I mean, there's a genius somewhere that can do it or come close, but not, I mean, it's, I don't know. I had someone tell me a couple of weeks ago, I asked someone, I was like, well, they were doing some, I'm not going to try to give away who this was, but I don't want to put someone on blast, but they were saying that they were doing something. I was like, well, you know, you should just be using ChatGPT for that. It's probably going to speed it up. And they're like, I don't trust the answers.
Mm.
And I literally said, so you think you're smarter than the world's most sophisticated generative AI? And they didn't even reply. I mean, it was, yeah, they were kind of like, because saying yes to that would be a remarkably egotistical and probably, yeah. I mean, 100% wrong, but okay. So still with that GPT search, we had industrial robots, service robots, mobile robots, humanoid robots, collaborative robots. Those are cobots.
Cobots. Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Like which of those are the biggest meat on your bone?
That's really interesting. Probably somewhere between like industrial and agricultural, we're seeing the most interest. That's usually because the stakes are pretty high.
Yeah.
But really, we're pretty all serving in that in those spaces. The thing that's really cool about robots, they look completely different. Like an agricultural tractor versus a drone versus a self-driving car, completely different things with completely different jobs.
Yeah.
The data that they produce is remarkably similar because they all have cameras, lidars, and radars, and propellers or actuators and control systems, and all that data looks very similar. So the same system on our side can help process and analyze all of that data for them. So we generally work with a lot of different types of those robotics companies that you mentioned.
The agriculture side of things is, I find to be really interesting. One, I'm located in Kansas where is a lot of agriculture. I also just bought a farm.
Nice.
Now I'm not farming anything other than memories from my family there, but I'm around and I see a lot of it going on. I have my whole life and you know, and I know a lot of people that have been in that space, and it's a challenge. And, you know, people look at things like inflation and the cost of goods and stuff like that. You know, the robotization of agriculture could make a big dent in that. Yeah. One, we're not really producing the number of farmers. It's not really trickling down the way it is. And a lot of that stuff, you know, okay, so I've only got a little 20-acre farm, but I did use the tractor that came with it to mow 5 acres. And I will tell you right now, I went in my house covered in dirt and gross shit. And the first thing I Googled was robotic lawnmowers. I did. Cause I'm like, God, this is just like, this is felt like, I mean, cause it's go down this line straight, turn around and then do it again. But it's a lot of that stuff. But here's the thing. If you got to pay a person to do it or have the different kind of equipment, it can be tough. And like another thing too that I thought was real interesting is a lot of that. So there's a big push to turn it electric.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because when you're in the middle of freaking nowhere, hauling diesel fuel around is no joke, man.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So like some of that, like the electric side of it, there's a green nature to it as well, but I mean, refueling is like a real thing, and you know, some, and then the cost of it, the availability of it, the sustainability of it, and the environmental impact of it. Because you know, theoretically, if you think about it, you probably don't want diesel fumes all over your food either.
Absolutely.
Or collecting in the field. So yeah. Good luck with that. But folks, here's the thing. This is what's going on around you. It's not all about like warrior drones. I mean, most of the things that businesses and entrepreneurs are trying to solve, because look, it's hard to get people to do some of these jobs that are highly repetitive, that are boring and mind numbing.
Who wants to do that stuff? Like
no one. And a lot of them create a sense that well, you know, like carpal tunnel syndrome or these overuse things. And okay, so if you've ever read the book, I think it was in Freakonomics, the book, but not the movie, they talk about strawberry farming. Mm-hmm. And strawberry farming is really brutal because strawberries need to grow in this little tiny, they usually grow in a little mound. They have to often have to be hand picked. And there's a lot, and so you get a lot of back problems. And it's like, I mean, if you were a strawberry farmer or work at one, you've got a 5-year window before. Yeah. No, it's true. Like you have like a 5-year window before you can't physically really do it because it's grueling. That's where a robot would be a better choice.
Oh, so. Cool. And these industries, they just have massive labor shortages right now.
Right.
I think robots really are going to be helpful in industries where there's labor shortages, like agriculture and construction is another big one. There's so many construction jobs, and same with like welding. I think the average age of a welder in the US is 50.
It's probably 50.
Yeah. They're aging out and no one is going into those.
I use that example a lot. I've compared it because software developers are the same thing. Why does Full Scale? And once again, if you want to build a team of software experts, go to fullscale.io. We have the people, the platform, and the process to help you with that. There aren't enough people to do it in the United States. So like all of our employees are in the Philippines. So we're creating, giving you vetted people. And that's what it's come down to in a lot of cases. Now that's easy to do because you can ship code around the world with the push of a button. You can't ship corn that way or build a car or do a lot of stuff like that. But everyone's complaining about inflation, but fuel rates are increasing, hourly rates are increasing. And that all trickles down to your price at the grocery store and all of it. So like this is important stuff, and this is innovation that should change the shape of markets.
Absolutely.
But it's really slow to come out, dude. Like I tried to buy electric farm equipment and stuff like that. I had an impossible time finding it. Most of the manufacturers have a product they say they make, but when you get into it, they don't.
That's right.
Yeah. They have like a small batch that they've put out at, quite honestly, probably an unaffordable price, and they're trying to get up to production speeds with that. What can change that, not just for agriculture, but for all of it?
Yeah, honestly, that's really kind of why we exist now, because people often ask me, like, where are the robots? Like, do we not have the technology?
Oh, they're all around you.
Yeah, they're all around you. But
it's vacuumed my floor this morning.
That's right. Yeah, they're honestly just really hard to build and get right. Only I would say in the last like 5 years have the right kind of cameras even existed that are kind of robust enough and easy to integrate and kind of weatherproof for these kind of applications. So, and of course, with the advances in AI themselves, like, you know, you can actually build a pretty good computer vision algorithm now that's pretty reliable at detecting, you know, that weed that you need to zap on your you know, lawn maybe, or your giant field. Or maybe that rock that you need to pick, for example. So a lot of the computer vision and AI applications have gotten a lot better now. And the actual sensor hardware has gotten a lot better. So we're seeing this kind of exciting convergence where a lot more types of robots are kind of coming together now. I was in Israel a few weeks ago, and I saw a couple of cool companies there. And one was even building robots that can climb skyscrapers, and they clean the windows on skyscrapers, which is pretty crazy. So there's some amazing stuff happening now.
And by the way, the humans, I knew a guy that used to do that.
Really?
He made like hundreds of dollars an hour for doing it. Because one, there aren't many people that are lined up for that job. And two, it's dangerous.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he did really, really well with that. And that was a very fearless dude. I'm afraid to be on a too tall of a ladder. So
Do you need a ladder though? I think you're super tall, right? Do you need a ladder?
I am quite tall, but, and you know, that's a common mistake that people make. Cause I've had a bunch, they're like, you're kind of scared of heights, but you're really tall. And that's not how that works. I'm not like afraid to be at the top in the top row of an arena watching a basketball game. It's when you like, the first time I realized I was scared of heights was actually I walked down a glass staircase on a cruise ship. And I felt like my stomach fell all the way to the bottom of it. Wow. And I was like, whoa, I felt really weird. And I was kind of realized that I would get queasy on some of that. So yeah, anyway, being tall doesn't solve that. All right. So you talk about, I think you had a good point. So I want to back up. So you mentioned OpenCV or computer vision. We've done some episodes about that. And this is why some of this innovation has been a challenge, because until recently, not a lot of people were working with OpenCV or CV, computer vision. So what is that? Computers see things in 2D. And in order to create depth and perception and field, and you look at, so we actually did an episode a long time ago. There's a guy in Kansas City that is one of the top open CV engineers in the US. And what did he use to do that? He invented the app that you use that helps you pick the color of paint at the hardware store.
Nice.
And the level of complexity in that is shocking. So you say, well, I'm looking at your background and I can see that you have like a beige colored wall, but because of the way the light shines on it and there's a corner up there, like that is actually very, from the optical sense of what your brain does, is highly complex. And then, so that's been out for 30 years and, you know, it's been out there for a long time, but you're 100% right. The ability to have an onboard processor that can make those decisions. That's what blows my mind about the Tesla. And my wife, who's tired of hearing it at this point, I'm like, Jill, do you know how programmatically and processor wise, what's really required to make this thing not drive us off a cliff? And she's like, I don't care. I'm like, but it's so amazing. She's like, I'm sure it is.
Wow.
But it's true, right? Like that's the thing, is if you can't add up the data and process it, I don't know.
Yeah.
So what is the, all right. So with that, great inventors use concepts like Moore's law and all of that to invent what they want in 10 years, not what they want tomorrow. They're thinking about what they got in 10 years. Cause if they're waiting for 9 years to start that, someone else is probably 9 years ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, are we truly in this golden age of a lot of this stuff finally like coming around and being realized, and like that should accelerate tons of stuff, right?
It is already. Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're seeing now. There are so many more robotic startups that are popping up just because like it was cost prohibitive 10 years ago to try and start some of these products, because you'd start doing your bill of materials for the robot you were going to put together and be like, yeah, I mean, we're not going to afford $15,000 per camera on one device. Yeah. Like no one's even going to buy the device for $1,000. So that just, the economics didn't work out with some of these cameras, and now they're becoming more commoditized. Ultimately, it's much easier.
Camera the linchpin in that? Is that the main thing, or is it the processors and chips?
Absolutely, those two. Yeah, it's really the advent of GPUs and embedded GPUs that can process all that camera data on board those robots and not need to send it back to some kind of, you know, cloud to do all the heavy lifting. You're right. It's the commodity
onboard processing and the ability to actually do it. Yeah, you talk about like a camera. So I do you look at repetitive things like so we're going to use iRobot for an example, because I think that's something a lot of people have in their home. Yep. I've had one for 8 years. The very first one I had, freaking hated it, dude. It just kind of went wherever it wanted to go. Like, have you ever had that old Roomba? It just bounced around like a pinball, you know? And like, and you're sitting there looking at that pile of dirt and you're going, come on.
It's that.
Come on. And I get it. And I spent more time watching that freaking robot try to find that dirt than I would have spent actually just vacuuming the floor.
True.
It's kind of like if you watch The Office, they were always looking for that screensaver where the square went exactly in the corner. You're just like, come on, get the dirt, get the dirt. Now, on the flip side of that, the newer versions, they have a camera up front. They have a light, like they identify, like it stops. And you know, here's the funniest thing. So you mentioned like whatever it is that it was stopping for. Do you know the number one thing they had to build it for? It was poop.
Wow.
Because if your dog poops on the floor and then your robot vacuum drives over it, it will then glaze the rest of your carpet either with visible poop or some form of it.
It's a poop.
And that is like the top thing. And I hadn't thought about that until an article came out about it about a year ago. And I was like, whoa. And it had a bunch of videos in it of people like complaining. Yeah, isn't that wild? That's the thing. That was the main driver, was not getting the robot to drive through poop. But with that, I've seen this. You talk about this big evolution. Like those robots are really smart now. They map the house. You can set them up in zones. It knows to detect when, hey, I picked up a little something extra here. Maybe I should back up and go over it again.
Yeah.
And all of those, and that's part of that evolution with these products too, is, well, one, being able to trust that it isn't going to smear poop all over everything. Right. How do you, when you're in the PR department at iRobot and you're like, God, we got another YouTube video of this thing, just, you know, I don't know, but that I have noticed that, and I didn't know if that was just their R&D, but it makes a lot more sense that
they're still selling the naive ones that just like bump around, and they are remarkably kind of, you know, silly actually sometimes. But
when you look at the utility though, so the next thing was is you could have an effective one. So I have the one that has the eyeball on it. It does actually, like, in their app, I can look at it and I can train it to it'll show me the obstacles that it found, and it stops and will drive around and avoid it. Mm-hmm. It does little, it's the little things too. Like the old ones, they just went everywhere. The new ones actually do straight lines in your carpet.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and so some of that, but I've been really impressed with that and your ability to like program it using existing technology like Wi-Fi to map things out. I mean, it's pretty impressive overall compared to where it was just 5 years ago.
You could have done it 10 years ago. It's really, as you said, the last 5 years. It's technology.
10 years ago, 8 to 10 years ago was that first one that just kind of bounced around. And you know, they ask you too, like they want to collect data. They're using the collective, network of all these things. Now you can say yes or no, but it learns to that's part of that open model. That's got to be using open, like, computer vision.
Absolutely. If it's got a camera, it's using computer vision. Yeah, for sure. And OpenCV is the largest popular open source library to do computer vision.
But so few people know anything about it.
Yeah. You know, it's not the easiest thing to get started with, I would say, computer vision. And actually, even over the last 5 years itself, computer vision has changed a lot. Like over the last 30 years, it was more geometric. So like computer vision algorithms were looking at stuff in the world, and that's okay, that's probably a face. You know, I'm kind of sure that's a face. But these days, computer vision is mostly deep learning oriented, and deep learning, I'm not sure how familiar you are with it, but it just, you know, you just end up pumping a lot of data through an algorithm, and that algorithm kind of learns from labeled examples of things and comes up with its own interpretation of why something is something. And that makes it kind of tricky to wrangle sometimes and make sure it's going to do the right and reliable thing, because there's a lot of non-determinism in there, and it might do the right thing 99.9% of the time, like you said in your Tesla, but then that 0.001%
of the time. You can't kill someone the one time out of 1,000 that's wrong. Did you ever watch HBO's Silicon Valley show?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so deep learning was needed when it was hot dog or not hot dog. and I'll let you use your imagination as far as what could be not be a hot dog.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was that. Yeah. So that was the app they built. It was great at identifying things shaped like a hot dog, maybe not at identifying whether it really was.
And that's where these algorithms fail, because, you know, it can sometimes just be the bias in the data that you use to train them can really screw them up. You know, obviously the famous examples, of course, were companies that have been using deep learning and computer vision for like facial recognition. They might have only trained on a database of white people, and then as soon as a person comes along or an Asian person comes along, they're actually harder to detect. And there are huge issues with that from an ethical perspective and a reliability perspective. So
there was a series called Better Off Ted, and I remember watching that, and they it was just this weird workplace kind of comedy, and they this company made all these weird things, but they always used their own products. But they had built a racist water fountain.
Oh, okay.
Like, so it was meant to like turn on, or like the sinks do, but it was only trained, they had trained it in only using white subjects. It wasn't recognizing other people, and it was just a play on that. But it's true. It's true. Yeah. So some of that's, yeah.
And it happens too, as well, because people just use data sets that already exist, and those data sets already have a lot of bias in, and they then build their systems with them. And it can be the same with any application, though. You can imagine, let's say you're building a robot that, you know, kills weeds in your giant farms. And if it's killing weeds and you only gave it data of a certain kind of weed and it never knew about another kind of weed, you know, it's either
going to skip it, or it's going to kill your flower bed.
Yeah, maybe it'll start killing your flowers. Yeah, absolutely. So
I've been really amazed. Like, so at the property I just bought, I have a landscape guy that's coming in. I mean, there's a ton of maintenance and whatever. And, you know, he pulls out his phone and uses an app and takes a picture of a tree or a leaf or any plant, and it tells him what it is.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, you know, like, I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, but that's probably an open CV kind of thing. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. It's interesting because the number one answer was industrial robots. I don't think a lot of people understand how prevalent that is. Is it fair to say that any company or any business that manufactures at scale is highly robotic?
Absolutely. Especially, you know, you can see some really cool videos online of like the automotive industry, like cars being assembled and cars being painted. It's all just like these arms flying around doing stuff. It's
100%.
It's really remarkable, actually. So a lot of that stuff is now automated and incredible like production efficiency as a result.
So you mentioned being from London, recently traveling to Israel. I'm assuming that you have traveled through Asia at some point.
Cool.
If you have ever been to the airport in Seoul, Korea, Robot City, man, they literally have these giant robots that are like human size that are rolling around and they're there for you. You can go up and talk to them. They recognize what language you're speaking. You can ask it questions. It has a monitor on the front of it. You know, and they're really neat and interesting, you know, and like, and they're smart and they're interesting. Now, one of the things that, so this is a service robot. They also have the world's biggest Roombas there, basically. I have pictures of them because I sent one to my wife. I was like, I think we need this one, but it's like, cause we have a little mop that like takes forever to mop the kitchen, but it eventually gets there. But this thing's like 3 feet wide.
Oh, wow.
And probably 3 feet tall, and it's mopping the floors there and doing a great job. What is a next level of service robot that we might see, or AI driven, that maybe isn't, I mean, is it the humanoid stuff that, or is it something different?
Yeah, I think, you know, you touched on it a bit before. It's probably the cobot space. I think that's going to be really interesting. There have been a lot of cobot companies over the last few years, and, you know, they haven't, it's just hard to make something so general, so useful sometimes. But now with AI, and especially things like GPT and these large language models, more than ever before, like humans can say some stuff and a computer can kind of understand what the human wants. And that's
or know that it needs to go learn it.
Needs to go learn it, maybe. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's been this is just in the last like year, of course, that these capabilities have now been possible. So I think actually in a lot of, you know, a lot of maybe kind of engineering environments where you know, you might need a robot to do something for you, or maybe as a surgeon, you know, you might say, can you pass me the scapula or whatever it is? Or scalpel, maybe I'm thinking, pass me the scalpel, you know, it'll actually pass the right instrument to you as a surgeon. And I think those kinds of applications now where, you know, you almost have a kind of a helpful assistive robot that makes you better at doing your job is a lot more possible because we'll be able to speak to them with natural language. And we've not been able to do that before.
Well, I think that's something that probably could be on this list if we talked about the future is definitely medical robots. You know, my sister's an anesthesiologist and her husband is a doctor as well. And, you know, and here's the thing is like, as humans, we naively tell ourselves that we're better at a lot of stuff than we are. Yeah. But if you can get that precision, you know, they use robots in surgery a lot more than you'd think for incisions, stitching up the incisions and a lot of different things. And I think that you'll definitely see that down the road. You also look at a level of singularity that will occur. So nanotechnology, meaning the stuff you really can't see. According to Moore's law, you will have the computing, within the next 15 years, we'll be able to fit the computing power of an iPhone into something the size of a red blood cell.
Sure. Yeah.
And think about that, people. That's crazy. If you think about that, considering that I'm 48 years old and I grew up with rotary telephones, and black and white TV for a couple of years of that.
TV, yeah.
Oh, my daughter, I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. My daughter asked me, she's like, Dad, when you were a kid, was TV black and white? And I'm like, that came right after asking if we even had TV.
Oh, bud.
And also asking if I had a record player. And I had to answer yes to that one.
Yeah, I was going to say that was probably a yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But singularity is the bonding between machine and man. And, you know, Ray Kurzweil is a guy that started out as a musical keyboard inventor and has become are you familiar with Kurzweil?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's been a voice on the singularity and talked about a lot of this stuff. At some point, they're going to just inject you with nanobots and they're going to live in your body. And, you know, having a father who had multiple heart surgeries before he passed, like these are things that will get in there and unclog an artery over time or do a lot of different things. And that is, that's, there's AI there. That's a robot.
They're just mini robots, basically. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Isn't it wild to think now we might be able to do that in 15 years. And unfortunately, hopefully AI can do some things to speed up the approval process on some of these things. And much like you're doing, figure out where the errors are. You know, because on some of that stuff, I mean, think if you think about that, and this is where, so I had, I think one of the very first episodes we did about this was actually with a blockchain inventor was talking about like all the, so you look at all the wearables, your iWatch and a lot of that stuff. These things are actually getting smart, and the AI and the sharing of the data and being able to link amongst each other a lot easier is doing a lot of things like to notify someone, hey, you suddenly have an irregular heartbeat. This is a problem, go to a doctor. Mm-hmm. Where right now, so much of medical is responsive. It's like after an event occurs, like you're having a heart attack now, hurry up and get to the doctor. You have a much, 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 much better outcome if you're able to get there before that event is fully wide open.
Yeah, same with cancer. I mean, my mom, very sadly, she had ovarian cancer and they couldn't detect it until it was stage 4, you know, and it's ridiculous. Like why couldn't they have found that earlier? And why couldn't there have been maybe some nanobots floating around in her bloodstream that alerted immediately, you know, when there was a detection of that. So.
Yeah. And then you look at robots too, and you mentioned things like tumors or other things. I mean, we're 15 to 20 years into things that have actual like lasers that go subdermal and like hit a little spot. So my aunt had traces of brain cancer, and she refers to it as like they were playing Space Invaders because they're just zapping little spots that were problematic. But the thing was, is they were guaranteed to get much bigger.
Yeah.
But the level of precision and accuracy that they did that at, you're kind of sitting there until you've experienced it, was like, whoa.
That's right.
But yeah, you talk about a shortage of medical professionals or whatever. These are very, very good uses of robots. What else is not? Because I think medical probably should have or could have been on this list, and maybe it falls under one of these subcategories. But what else wasn't on here? Like what else is?
It's a good question. I mean, logistics for sure, and mobility. I mean, we've talked a bit about self-driving.
But mobile robots were on there.
Okay.
So talking about capable of moving and navigating in their environment. So you're going to obviously get a whole subset of that. I guess the agriculture stuff could even fall under that. So self-driving cars.
Yeah. The categories get broader and broader as you kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's right.
Yeah. And I guess the medical stuff probably could have fallen under, well, that's not human. That almost could be a cobot.
Yep.
In some ways. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
I think that's pretty interesting. All right. So while we're here, I would be remiss to ask, because there is so much money flowing into robotics and AI. So you guys raised some capital at one point in 2022. Did you feel that was remarkably easier than it might have been in the past?
That's a good question. You know, I think last year and this year have been pretty weird times to raise capital for startups.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
The markets are a little strange right now. We were a little nervous about being able to raise the seed funding for our startup, but I think we got quite lucky at the end of last year. It was kind of quiet in the markets, and then this generative AI hype kind of came along, and now there's a
lot. Did you raise before that happened?
We raised just before that, yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of good timing.
It was trending that direction, but I think the GPT thing just
blew it up for sure. But even now, I mean, there's a lot of investment in these generative AI startups, but investors are also still a little more concerned about kind of who the real winners there are going to be. There's a lot of ebbs and flows in that industry right now. And if we had raised, you know, if we'd existed the year before, 2020, 2021 were pretty good times for raising capital. And then we were pretty lucky in 2022. 2023 now is a little more peculiar. If you don't have AI in your name, it's maybe going to be challenging. But even if you do, the investors are pretty suspicious about, you know, what's going to stick.
The current stats that I saw that came out that covered, you know, 6 to 12 months, well, especially the last 6 months. So the GPT thing really exploded a lot of the interest in venture capital. And why am I bringing that up at the end of the episode? If this is something that you're thinking about doing, I think that you've got, the numbers are the numbers. And right now, the amount of money flowing into AI related startups just in that category may actually outclass all the other categories added together. You also mentioned like the long tail earlier. So the long tail is if you're looking at a graph and then it's really high on the left side, and then it's got this really long tail of like singular instances, that's the long tail. That's often referred to in marketing. The long tail marketing is a big thing because it's easier to go out there and pick up those ones. That, and then the popular example with that was when you used to actually buy music off of iTunes, all of the
all
of the things that got purchased one time every day was this long tail, but those ones all added up to be a higher number every day than two plus.
Right.
And that's pretty impressive when you think about it. So my point with that is take a look at where AI or robotics or the things that are trending might tie in well to your business or your expansion or your scalability if you're trying to raise capital, because these are trendy things, you know. The ever-changing opinion of the VC.
That's right. Yeah. And I think, you know, the amazing thing about this latest wave of technology is that like most businesses can leverage it. Like I would struggle to think of a startup right now that like could not leverage like GPT and LLM somehow. You know, it's like you're being given some superpowers, basically.
It's a muse in your pocket. I was even, I worked in the music industry for a while. And I still have a lot of friends that are professional musicians, and they'll ask me some questions. They'll be like, what's this AI stuff? And I'm like, and I asked GPT to write me a country song that was based on the theme that I wanted that I felt like my ex-girlfriend's heart. I wanted my beer to be as cold as my ex-girlfriend's heart. And dude, it wrote a hit like right there. I like read it to my buddy. He's like, what?
Wow.
He's like, it did that in 15 seconds.
You could record it.
What?
It could be.
I know, totally. You can have it if you want. I mean, I'm not talented in that regard, but that's the point. Like you can use it for so many things. I think that the main thing with the generative stuff is, you know, like it is a muse. It can give you inspiration. Quit looking at the results that you get from that and going, well, only 90% of this is good. Congratulations. Throw out the 10% that wasn't because it was free anyway, or $20 a month or whatever. You're looking for the nuggets in there. You're looking for the gold, not the dirt that it's buried in. So I think that's something to bring up. All right. So once again, with me today, Benji Barash, who is the co-founder and CEO at Roboto.ai. Go to Roboto.ai. I get it right eventually, right? Cool. If you want to learn more about it, today's episode of Startup Pulse is brought to you by Fullscale.io. Building your software team does not have to be difficult. We talked about Fullscale a little earlier. I'm not going to extend this ad read for that. With that, here at the end of the show, whenever I get a founder as whenever having a conversation with another founder, I do the founder's freestyle, which gives us an opportunity to say any closing remarks. I don't know if there's something we left out, anybody you want to thank, anything that stood out during the show. Like what are your closing arguments, sir?
Yeah, really. Well, I just think, you know, as we'd said, robots are the future. You know, they're going to disrupt a lot of the industries that exist today for good reason, because we have a lot of labor shortages and we have an aging population in some of these domains. As we'd said, the hard thing about getting robots into production and making them successful at what we want them to do are all these edge cases they run into. And that's really what our company is helping other robotics companies with. We're helping them find these edge cases, store all of that data, analyze all of that data that they produce, and then ultimately get their robots into production faster. So yeah, it's been really interesting to talk about that.
I mean, this is the future, folks. I mean, that's just, so I'm going to lead my freestyle with that. Like, this is the solution to so many problems. I think people get upset. They're like, well, robots are going to take the jobs. You're going to create different jobs, right? They're doing the jobs that people don't want to do, or that those jobs usually have to be overpaid. All this is a trickle down effect. You talk about like the cost of raising corn, which corn turns into so many different things that you don't identify as corn.
That's right.
But if that cost goes up, the other costs go up with it, and all of that, and that's where robots become a scalable solution. They're everywhere, man. They're everywhere. I think people just because they don't have Rosie from the Jetsons, like, there's my age again. But you know, that's the whole thing. It's not necessarily coming as C-3PO or R2-D2, but that's coming too.
Yeah, that is coming too. Those will be kobolds. Yeah. C-3PO was a pretty badass kobold, I would say.
Oh yeah, yeah. He is the ultimate polyglot. You know, I think he speak like 6 billion languages or something crazy like that, but. But yeah, so it's common. And I think the main thing when you talk about innovating with AI is, you know, you are 100% right. There's really no business that can't benefit from the use of it. So if you're not trying it, get out there and figure it out. Like, go ask ChatGPT how ChatGPT can help your business. Define your business as much as you can. Talk about the features, advantages, and benefits of your product, the biggest problems you need to solve, all of that, and then see what it says. And you're going to be surprised. You're going to be surprised. Don't just ask it, what are the most popular dogs in the world? That's not a good use of it, but it has some problem-solving skills that are pretty advanced.
We talked about the singularity, but imagine a version of ChatGPT where it's coming up with better business ideas itself. It then has an army of kobolds that go and build those businesses for it. And then it's just printing cash.
I mean, that's where some of it's going. I mean, a lot of it too, it's like you talk about people have been asking me a lot. They're like, are you worried that AI is going to replace the software developer? No, not really. The AI currently makes software developers better because it picks up a lot of errors and speeds up the writing of code and some of that. It's still probably a long way away from truly having the innovative ideas and execution that go with it, because that's still a human thing, but it's out there, man. Thanks for joining me today. I need to go make sure that my robot hasn't run over any people while we've been doing this, because I'll have a lot of work to do this afternoon. So I'll catch up with you down the road, man.
Really nice to meet you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.